This is Sounding Board Parenting, creating healthier human connections through the commonality of parenting, exploring the world of parenting with high-performing mums and dads from a range of backgrounds, industries, and family dynamics.
He said, the whole world looks different.
You can do it your way.
My life has been fundamentally altered by their existence.
I gotta tell you, kids don't stop learning.
That is how I change the story.
Babies are instant community generators.
My growth curve just like shot up after I had a kid.
I wasn't planning any of it.
Let's jump in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Sounding Board Parenting Podcast. It is awesome to have you all back here listening again to us explore the world of parenting. And today I have Casey here with me, and I'm absolutely ecstatic and excited to jump into this chat with you, Casey. And before we do, I'd love for you to be able to just introduce yourself and tell us a bit about yourself and the name and age of your child as well.
Sure. Sean, I don't even know where to start. I've been listening to the podcast and really enjoying what I've been hearing, and I love podcasts. It's a great way for me to escape when I'm doing all those green frog activities like housework. So I really appreciate what you're creating. It's opened up so many thoughts for me. So thank you for having me. Probably the best place to start is with me. I'm Casey, and I am lucky enough to live in beautiful Perth. I work as a naturopath, and that is my passion. So it's not just my job, it's my passion as well. So I have to say sometimes the boundary gets a little bit thin and it rolls over into all day, all hours of the day and night. That's isn't who I am. That's what I work as, but it's certainly, you know, everything that I do and love. I have a 5-year-old girl, her name's Tilly, and she's an absolute pleasure. She was a little, came at not quite the timing we expected, but as we all know, life brings us things for a reason, and we're blessed to have her. So it's, yeah, the best joy and the best fun that we have.
I love the way that you said for a reason. It's it's something that I think you can go one of two ways. You can say things are happening to you or for you. And even just from our chat before jumping into the podcast, I get the strong vibe that you're about things happening for you. And that's something I resonate with as well. And you mentioned there just around timing. I'd love to go back in time a little bit with you now. And what's the story behind the moment that you found out you were going to be a mum, Casey?
Yeah, sure. So we had been somewhat trying for a while, and we knew that there were some fertility concerns, and we had been through a bit of investigation and a few different things, but we decided that we would wait a couple of years. We'd, you know, sort of put that on hold, and I'd go and set up a new clinic and get that established and move on, you know, sort of move in that direction. And Aaron, my husband, he had a few things he wanted to conquer first. So we said, well, you know what, maybe this is a universal message that we need to wait a couple of years, which was hard because my desire, that wasn't my gut's desire or my heart's desire, but I knew in my head that it was something we had to do in that order. And that's every fertility couple that I've worked with or know of. As soon as you shift your focus, what happens? You fall pregnant. So I fell pregnant and I had the keys to the clinic, the new clinic. It was completely empty shell. And I stood there with a friend of ours who's an accountant, and he'd met me there, and I literally picked the keys up that day. And I said, yeah, you know, this is where the walls are going. This is where everything's going. And as I'm talking to her, I'm thinking, gee, I don't feel right. There's an odd feeling. And oh, my boobs don't feel right. And I said, no, this isn't normal. And sure enough, I got home and I said to Aaron, you know, I don't feel right. I have a funny feeling I'm pregnant. And he was like, what do you mean? And sure enough, I was pregnant, and we literally had just got the keys, you know, the big business loan and everything. And sadly, that pregnancy didn't actually last. We had what's called a missed miscarriage. So my body was still showing I was pregnant, and everything was going as according to plan. And And then at the had a scan at 13 weeks and no heartbeat. So, you know, that was absolutely devastating because I had we had wanted pregnancy, we'd wanted a child, and we put it on hold, but at the same time it was a bit chaotic timing. And so we went through that heartbreak, and then a few months, not too long after, I fell pregnant again. You know, well, that's what happened. And so I was pregnant from the very get-go of having a brand new business. And that came with some extreme challenges. And as I say, I think there's a huge reason for that. It wasn't about, it was hard. It's been really hard, but it wasn't, there's been massive lessons in there, and they are lessons that we and I will carry forever. It's, so I don't see it as a bad thing. I see it as a lesson. So I don't actually remember. I said to Aaron last night, do you remember when I had fallen pregnant with Tilly? Do you actually remember? And neither of us remember that moment. I do remember sitting on the edge of the bed and crying. I had to give up netball. I was like, oh, I have to give up netball. But I think it was just a bit of a hormone rush. So on we went, and here we were with a business and a baby. And I literally was still working in the clinic until it was like 7 o'clock at night, and the hospital rang and they're like, you need to get here. You're meant to be here to be induced. And I was like, I won't be there. I've got a business to run. Like, I'm doing my best, and I've got my pays to do, and I won't be there. I'll be there soon. And sure enough, they were like, where are you? You're meant to be here having a baby. And that was how it kind of rolled. And it's not how I would do it if I was to choose to do that again. And it was not how I would wish for anyone. However, the lesson for me was I always like to have control, and I know I have a plan and I have a goal, and I'm going to do this, and then this will work this way and this will work this way. And I had to learn surrender, like the biggest parenting lesson. I had to learn to surrender that level of control and embrace some flexibility, which has been amazing to learn.
I have a feeling that we're going to dive into a few of those lessons that you're talking about there as well. Mm. And just on a side note, have you taken netball back up since having Tilly?
Yeah, I have. Not as much as I was. You know, I was playing 7 to 10 games before, and I continued to play. On a Saturday, I went back after 6 weeks and continued to play until last year, just socially on a Saturday. And it was awesome. It was my kind of one thing. I've got to do this, because you can imagine that level of pressure led to some pretty hectic postnatal anxiety and postnatal trauma. So I really, netball was like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to stick with this. And it was me intellectualizing. So, but I'm now about to embrace. I'm trying again to hit the courts. So
awesome. Yeah. Wow, that's it's something I've heard before in terms of whether it's talking to a fellow dad or a mum, in terms of having that release, whether it's release or just that other focus. And you mentioned before a few of the roles that you feel like you play in life, and it's something that has been really important here at Sandy Board Parenting as well, is being able to increase awareness around being able to have different focus areas in our life, being able to have different roles, because what is a common trend that's coming out is when we identify with that one role fully, whether it be a parent, whether it be a business owner, whether it be an employee, neglecting those other roles is inevitable as well. And so it's really cool to hear netball was part of that for you. And what other roles would you say that you play in life currently as well, Casey?
Yeah, definitely. So my work role has certainly had probably the biggest part of my time and energy, and it's definitely taken a fair whack of my identity in the last 5 years. And I'd say because I had to just strongly knuckle down to get through, really. It was a survival mode. So it was work and mother. But I knew that wasn't actually healthy. However, I had to go through the process to get to that point where I could go, okay, I've got to step up and back into my other roles as being me, just Casey, like Casey without anything else, or Casey the friend, and Casey the sister, Casey the daughter. And, you know, there's times I haven't been able to do that. And I remember saying to one of my friends, I know I haven't seen you, but as long as when she gets to school, we can go for a coffee on a Friday, let's just make that the goal. And it was like, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not ignoring you. I just have got to churn through this time. And so I really, it was about, Tilly was nearly, she must have been around three. And at that point, I said, right, I've got to go and do something for myself. And I headed over to Brisbane to do a personal development course that I'd been putting off. I couldn't go because I was pregnant and feeding and so on. And that was a real turning point where I actually stepped back into me, that this, you know, I was a real human and I had needs too. And it changed my mindset from being, it's Casey work, Casey mum, Casey work, Casey mum. And sure, they might have been micro minutes and micro seconds I've been able to give to myself over the last couple of years, but it gave me the ability to take the clouds away and actually see that I can have those micro minutes, and they're just getting bigger and bigger as time goes on. And the more I apply that, the focus to that, the better it gets. So, yeah, if you're asking what my roles are now, I definitely have a more even spread of me as a person, me as a mum, me as a worker, and I see that in my clients. I see how it's almost like a vortex of sucked into parenthood and almost stuck there for a little bit, and I think that's part of the journey. I really do.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of what you said before, you mentioned something about a certain part of the pregnancy, I think it was, potentially doing it differently. In terms of that whole journey between becoming pregnant and up until now, business, family, everything in between, when you reflect on it, is there anything that you would do differently now, that if you could go back and have your time over again?
Yeah, I read that, you know, because you said to me, just these might be a possible couple of questions I may throw at you. And last month when I turned up for our interview a month early, I hadn't actually read the questions. I was like, you know what, I'm used to being interviewed, I'm used to speaking, I'm not even going to read the questions. But then, you know, this week I thought, oh, I better prepare myself. And I read that, and I was chatting with my husband about it. We, you know, we really like to talk things through and understand where we both sit with things. So, and I said to him, you know, what do you reckon? Like, what are your thoughts on that? And because I was thinking, I just don't know what I would change. You know, when reflecting back, what would I do differently? I don't really know that I have that thought. Not because I would love to have. There's lots of things I would love to have done as such, maybe worked less or, yeah, but I don't see it that way, Sean. I see it as I had to learn those lessons, and they were, it's okay. I'm completely comfortable with that. You know what? It was really freaking hard, if I'm allowed to say that. It was, you know, I was working 50 hours and, you know, let's be honest. Okay, there's one thing. There's one thing I would have done. I would have been more. I wish I had have been more. How do I explain this? Accepting of the fact that I couldn't control everything. And as a result, I was so in control mode that I was going to just pop this baby out and go back to work and everything's going to be fine, that I never actually pre-organized a phone number for my locum. And as a result, 3 days after giving birth, one of my clients had a bit of tummy pain from some magnesium, and she literally went spastic at me because I hadn't left a phone number for the locum and I was in labor. And I understand there's a lot around that. But what I know is that I knew I was having a baby, but my mind was so in control that it was going to be at this time and this time. And that's just not real. That's just not real. And that's what I say about this level of surrender has been my big, big learning from this. So it wasn't a nice experience, but if I could go back and do one thing, I would try and learn that that lesson of flexibility and surrender earlier.
Thank you for sharing that. Just want to acknowledge that as well. That's it sounds like that's coming from a deep place in terms of just being able to reflect on that. I'm just interested to know how do you feel right now, Casey, in this moment, reflecting on that?
It's still uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still really uncomfortable. It wasn't nice. It was an awful experience. And as a woman, it's not how I would handle a situation to another woman. I have a level of understanding. I understand that when people are struggling with fertility, their mind goes anywhere and everywhere. And there's a level of irrational behavior. So it's not, so whilst I still have that gut, that awful feeling, I don't have the same level of trauma around that experience and around that time. But it's certainly still uncomfortable.
Just to sort of move laterally from that a little bit, if there's someone out there listening right now that may be resonating with that experience in terms of they may be in the midst of it right now, mm-hmm. what if anything would you like to say to them in that situation?
From the fertility side of things?
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard and it's okay. It's okay. It's completely from a place of love. I completely understand, and people do, other women understand. We don't talk about these infertility issues like we probably could, because it's hard to share. But my biggest advice would be find somebody who genuinely cares, not for the gossip factor. And if that's an external body, being a practitioner or a healer, do that. But get these irrational thoughts off your chest and feel and own them. Don't feel guilt, shame, or fear about them, because every thought is worth honoring, because every thought and feeling is real and it's true. And you're entitled to them. So get them out there. I have thick skin. I was okay to handle that situation had I probably not been, 3 days postpartum. So there's definitely no blame there. But for women out there, that's my biggest thing, is it's okay to feel every feeling. It's feelings are okay.
That's powerful. I'm just taking a moment to let that sink in, and just in the words of Brené Brown, who I follow quite closely, and is someone who I think is a fantastic role model across the world. And she often talks about stepping into the arena of vulnerability, and I just want to acknowledge you for doing that, because I can see that's what just happened. So thank you for opening up like that, and just to expand on that as well, I'm interested to know, you touched on it a little bit earlier, and I'd like to expand on it. How has parenting changed your life, Casey?
Yeah, I just don't remember pre-parenting almost. I do remember what I class as crazy Casey. I do remember my non-parenting very young days. But I think parenting feels like it's just been here forever. And the intensity and the love that I feel as a parent is phenomenal. And what I have learned is the power of friendship and the power of family connection. And even though I had that, the level of its intensity is so profound now. Between my sisters and the support of my parents and my husband, you know, with all new babies and businesses comes struggle. We've definitely had struggle, but it's a different, I feel different about it. I know that's cliche, but I have a different, it's a different feeling and I love it. And that's what's changed. And the other things that have changed is my personal growth, because as we spoke earlier, everything, every age bracket, every little behavior or activity makes you think about your own childhood and how you feel. And because I'm proactive with going, okay, where does that come from? What does that mean? I really have looked into a lot of things of my own stuff and created some good shifts.
You said that it's hard to recall life before parenting, and I can resonate with that as well. It's it's interesting because it's this profound moment that it's profound and it's life changing, and it's blurry in the same sort of sentence. And I suppose what I'm interested in knowing as well is it different from what you thought of it as being? Is it different from what you potentially expected being a parent?
I don't really know. I don't think I actually thought what did I expect being a parent was going to be like. And I'm a typical Virgo, as you can tell. I think about everything, analyze everything. What I guess really blindsided me was when you look at this child and you're like, I actually physically made that. And even now, it was like last week, we sat at the table and I was like, you know, we made her. We made her. Like arms, legs, we made her. Like that really blows me away. I'm still fascinated by the human body, and that is different. Has it changed me? I'm probably... How has it changed more? Is it different to what I expected? I don't really know. I can't answer that at this point.
That is okay. I'm always interested in asking that because I have this clear recollection while Jess is pregnant. I had this, I'll call it a set idea at that time, a set expectation that I would be teaching Oscar, our son, everything. I'll teach him how to do this, how to do this, how to do this, how to do this. And I had it completely mistaken in a lot of ways. Not that I haven't taught him anything, but one part of that approach, that mindset that has been completely changed is that he has taught me more than I would ever have hoped to have taught him, I think. And it's been huge, that two-way learning and just embracing that now, and initially being shocked by it, but getting to a point where it just fascinates me now. And he's not even three, and I honestly think that he has taught me more than I would ever have hoped to have taught him. So it's that's been a real revelation for me, and I'm curious to know what have you learned from Tilly, Casey?
Yeah, I resonate with what you're saying. I definitely do. You know, what I've learned is to improve my communication. I'm really focused on communication and my behaviours, and thinking, gosh, would I accept that from in a childlike state, and or in a child-parent relationship? Would I actually accept that as two adults? Well, why do I behave like that if that's not what I'm wanting to teach and embrace? So I've definitely, this two-way learning is phenomenal. I think the biggest thing I've learned from her is how to actively be present. So I've really always focused on being present, and years ago I was introduced to the fish philosophy. I don't know if you've seen that. It's the Pike Place in Seattle. And it's a management kind of philosophy, but it also has a life philosophy with it. And one of the philosophies is about being present. And it's something that I've always worked towards, but not necessarily something that I have fully been able to connect with, because I was always off thinking I must control my business, I must control my life. So presence could be quite challenging. And so that is something I've really learned from her, the power of presence, because if I can give that even the smallest amount of quality time, being her love language, and giving her that presence, the way it smooths our day and makes us gel and work together is huge. So the power of presence and the ability to be more present has certainly been a big lesson that I've learned as a result of Tilly.
What is being present for you?
Yeah, so definitely off my phone, not working, and being completely engaged physically and emotionally and intellectually with either the conversation or the game. So I can be present. We have a little ritual in the morning, and it's, and most people would go, oh, TV's bad, or, you know, some people be like, TV's bad, but we have this little ritual in the morning, and she watches Peppa Pig and Bluey. Now, that's, let's not even get into Peppa Pig, but this is our ritual, and it's so important to us. We go there, and I sit, and I'm sort of half cuddling and embracing her and getting her dressed for school. Now, she knows how to dress herself. She knows how to do that. But there's physical connection. We chat about whatever the show is, whether at the moment it's, you know, Peppa and Bluey. We've watched the same Bluey episode 6,000 times.
What one's your favourite? What's your go-to Bluey episode?
The Tickle Crab, Tickle Crab.
I've got so many. I think mine is the episode. I think it's a new one. It was from the new set episodes they released, but it was one about... It was about the little Jack Russell and his newfound friend, I think. And he, I think there's a military sort of parent involvement in it, but I absolutely love what they do. They're lesson packed, like for child and parent too, but it's, it's amazing.
It's so good. And we sit there and we talk about the show, and I might have a little whisper in her ear, and she kind of strokes my leg with her arm, or we do hair. And even though the TV's on, we're so involved and present with that 15 minutes. And then we, you know, I let her watch the next one while I quickly get ready myself, and off we go. And we never have arguments in regards to turning the TV off. Maybe I'm blessed, but I really truly believe it's because we've created this little connection and this little ritual. And it's just like a little love tank filler. And that's what I class as presence. So I don't think presence is, you know, sitting and eyeballing each other. It can be with the TV. It can be cooking. It can be whatever, playing in the kitchen, which, you know, I do get a bit wear a bit thin with babies after 5 hours playing babies. But that's what I class as presence.
You know what? At the end of the day, I think for a long time I've been one of those people. So, for example, we don't have a TV. We've got the iPad and stuff, which is where Bluey comes out on. But I think I've been one of those people that for a long time was at that other end of the scale that you're talking about, TV does this. But you know what? Just from listening to you, that sort of popped up into my head. And what I love about what you said was, you've got that clear intention for that part of the day to be able to go and connect physically, to talk, to just be with her. And I think that's very different to what we do hear out there about just flicking it on and just not interacting whatsoever, whether it be physically, whether it be by voice, whether it be just being there with her. That's where I think there's a difference, and I admire that intention, that clear intention to create or attach something that is deeper and more meaningful to that time, because it's a time that Yeah, I mean, we've done it before as parents, in terms of it can be time to yourself, which can be beneficial, but it can also run away as just lost time. And lost sometimes time. Yeah, right. Sometimes that's what I see it as. But even just listening to you there, yeah. I can hear how important it is that time for you both, which is cool.
Sean, have you worked out Oscar's love language yet? Or maybe he's three, coming on three, maybe not so. Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah. So Jess and I are really clear on ours. So I'm all about the physical touch. I love getting in for a cuddle, mucking around with a tickle here and there. And Jess is more about the quality time.
Yeah.
And the gestures and more so actually voice. And I think we've noticed Oscar at this phase heading down that way. And so it's actually something that's interesting, because I'll often just sort of fall back into my love language of going in for a cuddle, and there'll be times where it's just not aligning with him, not his jam at that time, which is something we've definitely picked up on. But that's sort of as far as it's got in that space so far.
Well, I had to really engage in that quite relatively early, because I was back at work so soon and doing so many hours. And what I would do is organize my work so it was pretty much when she was sleeping. So as things have changed, that's the best I did. And other than the time, my mum would have her quite a bit. And so what would happen was I'd come home from work, and then we'd have this, when we still have this kind of 2 to 3 hour block, and pick her up from kindy or pick her up from school, whichever. And then I head back to work. And so that when she's asleep, I'm not missing out on her and she's not missing out on me. But what I noticed was I would rush in and prep the dinner, pick her up, and it was so disjointed. And I was like, what's going on here? And it was when I went, okay, let's go back and see what this love language is and what it is. And I knew it was quality time. So that's when I put in this extra 10 minutes of solid quality time. And again, the same thing happened. The rest of the evening ran so smoothly because I was listening to her communication, not as whinging or as being naughty, but as her trying to communicate the best way she knew how as a small child. And I realized, she's after quality time. She needs a bit of me. So, yeah, it's
a really interesting point. Yeah, it's such an interesting point that you make, in terms of, I think with a lot of things to do with parenting, about like the actions or the choices that we make, asking yourself, is it with their love language? Is it with their interests in mind? Or is it coming from my preference, from my interest? Is this decision that I'm making about me more than it is about them? And that's something that's come up for me in the past, and I'm sure it will come up in the future, in terms of, like I said, going to that default of my love language is physical touch. So it happens quite often. It happens habitually at the moment. And yet, it's just about bringing some conscious thought into that. And there are times now where I will adapt that to try and just, instead of going and mucking around and hugging and stuff, I'll go and just sit with him and literally just hold some space there while he's playing with some cars or whatever. And he might bring me into play, or he's just happy playing by himself at times as well, which is cool. But just being able to, tap into where are they really finding their energy? Where do they like that love language? What is their real goer, I suppose, in that space too? So
yeah, it's one of my, and the love language is one of my most powerful clinical tools, for parents as well, and for anyone really. I use it so often, but I use it so successfully. We use it so successfully as a family unit. So
that is awesome. That is really cool. Time for a short reflection break. This is an opportunity for you to stop, take a breath, and reflect on your past week as a parent. If you have a pen and paper near you, that's great. If not, simply use your phone or laptop. I want you to write down three things. First, write down one moment in the past week that you were proud of yourself as a parent. Second, write down one area of your parenting that you would like to improve for the next week. Third, write down one moment from the past week where your child or children have made you smile. Be kind to yourself and enjoy the rest of the podcast. You mentioned before around Tilly going to school now and just with work, having to obviously have support from family and that sort of thing too, because it is a part of today's society, just being able to try and build up those support networks too. I'm interested to know, how has parenting, what sort of impact has parenting had on your career, Casey?
Yeah, it's had a huge impact. It's had a huge impact. In both positive and negative ways. There was a lot of survival mode for the first, few years, because it was literally just pressure, business pressure, financial pressure. At the same time, my husband had lost a lot of income due to some changes with his work. So we were under a lot of financial stress, which I find very challenging to do my work at my absolute peak, because you're under pressure. You know, the free-flowing creativity and mindset, it's very hard when you're in a captivated anxiety jail, basically. So it was very challenging. I just got through on survival mode, and I'm so grateful for the exposure that I had before I had Tilly with how to evolve my clinical experience, the processes that I use within the clinic. And if I didn't have those and I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, which in my industry can happen to a degree sometimes with processes, not knowledge, processes, I think it wouldn't have worked. I would literally cry my whole way to work and cry my whole way home, pull my shit together, do my job. And it was very, very regimented. The beautiful thing about my work is, because I love it so much and I'm so passionate, it would almost recharge me to get through the rest of the day. So I would do my job and get through. I don't think I was able to give it the best that I could at that time. And as a result, that meant, in business, if you're not giving it 100%, 24/7, it can be hard. So that's kind of the negative side. But then on the flip side and the positive, I saw my clients in a whole new way, and my personal experience has given me the ability to care in a different way. And I've cared for women, and women fertility health is where I sort of worked to start within my career back 17, 18 years ago, polycystic ovaries, female health, menopause, and women predominantly all this time. But in becoming a parent and going through those trials and tribulations and the pressure and the stress that we had, I learned a whole different level of understanding and techniques to support people, because I was literally going out and doing it for myself. And strategies. So my focus has somewhat shifted as a result in a very positive way, because I can have such a bigger impact and help people. So even though I wouldn't wish the pressure and the stress I had on anyone, again, it's, what does pressure create? Diamonds. And that's the reality. It's given me tools and courses that I've followed up, or people that I've gone and researched and read. That wouldn't have happened. That just didn't happen. So I wouldn't be now the practitioner I am, which is ever evolving.
What did you mean by it's led to you seeing your patients in a different way? I'm curious to know a bit more about that.
Yeah, so you can empathize and understand where people are at, but when you truly have walked in those shoes, it's a whole different level of understanding. It's just different. And I don't know how to explain that. I actually don't. It's energetically different. It's energetically different. And I don't do a huge amount of energetic healing like I originally did, a bit more of that. But, you know, I'm really very much evidence-based, clinical-based now. And I go out and do my own energetic healing and I refer out for that. I feel you need to be just doing that. But I just connect differently. I have a greater understanding of what people can really do. Some clients will say to me, oh, that doesn't seem like much. Like, is that all you want me to do? I'm like, yeah, that's actually all I want you to do. And then in 2 weeks, they come back and they're like, oh, I achieved it. I did it. And I'm like, yeah. And then sometimes they'll come back and go, I don't know why I thought I wanted you to give me more because I couldn't even do that. And so I have more of an understanding around what is actually achievable, because in our conscious mind, we want to lose weight and be happy and not be snappy at our children and be motivated and driven. And, you know, we want to sleep well and have the libido like a 20-year-old. And, you know, we want the world. Like, that's what people come in wanting. But that's got to happen in baby steps. And to be able to know how to do that in baby steps and know that this is realism from a personal experience is very powerful clinically. So that's probably my best way to describe it. So my holistic counseling background has changed. I've been able to embrace that a little more. And as you know, I'm moving on to do psychotherapy. So yeah, it's been really positive. Parenting's been really positive on my career as well as crazy.
Can I just say, I've got a thought that popped up when you were talking about that too, but can I just say it sounds like you're on an epic journey. Like, I just want to throw that out there as well. It is awesome to be able to connect with you and have this conversation, because I'm really enjoying just diving into this with you, and I have a feeling that there might be a 2.0, 3.0 at some point too, because I'm really enjoying having this conversation. And just on what you said about when you've walked in their shoes or similar shoes, at least, it's created that deeper understanding, that deeper connection. I tend to agree. In terms of some of my studies that I've gone through for coaching, for example, that there's been differing views on that approach in terms of trying to detach and separate yourself, which I resonate with as well. But then there is a whole nother element that, now that I've been practicing as a coach for a bit, that there is something different. It's not saying you can't be effective in both of those approaches, and I think you can be, but there is something different to that deep, there is some deeper connection when there is a similarity in some form between a coach, a coachee, a practitioner and their client, their patient. It's a really interesting point that you make.
Yeah, and I think it is detach. You can detach from your own stuff because you're not in your personal hat. If you have your boundaries between this is my life and this is my work, and I mean, I have preclinical rituals that I do. Ritual sounds a bit out there, but you know, I have preclinical processes that I do that put me in that space of my healing hat and my work hat. And so, yes, I draw on my experience, but my experience is very vast and, you know, it's long-standing. I started in healthcare when I was 15 in pharmacies, and, you know, I finished naturopathy in 2003. So my what experience is gold, you know. So, yes, you can detach. You just got to bring all this stuff in to create the gold.
totally. Now you started to delve into something you mentioned before around owning those thoughts, owning those choices. And now if we can extend on that, owning our story and choosing that story that we want and then being able to own it. And I think it's so common. I mean, I've been in the place of of, okay, I'm starting a new chapter now in my life, so I'm going to push away and avoid the past or whatever, the past chapters, the past stories. And it's so common, just talking to different people in the community about it. Once you can get to that point of acknowledging that you're moving on to a new chapter, but still being able to own and stay connected with your roots, with the chapters that have come before you, it just adds a whole lot of depth. And there's something about it that helps you move forward in a more powerful, connected way, I think, as well.
Yeah, and if you, I truly believe if you take the time to understand your belief systems, whether you like them or you don't, and understand what story they create, you have so much more empowerment to make the decisions that are more driven towards your ideal life or your ideal parenting or your ideal being a friend or your ideal being a partner. And I'm blessed because my husband is, whilst he doesn't always love the way I'm like, come on, let's do a little more growth, he actually knows and enjoys the outcome as a result for himself. And so together we can have these conversations in regards to our belief systems and the stories and where we connect with them. And I think we're so lucky that we invested in ourselves and in our relationship prior, because it's been really challenging, really challenging. And had we not had that level of understanding or ability to look at our old stuff, I don't think we'd be here married today, because, you know, we went through some pretty tough storms. So, yeah, I'm forever grateful for the people that taught me to look at belief systems and stories and understand my stuff and not be afraid of it.
I get that sense coming through loud and clear as well, that you're someone that has really owned what has led up to this point too, which I think is really cool as well. And I'm curious to know a little bit more about you as a parent. So how would you describe your parenting style if you could?
Yeah, I think my parenting style really comes from a place, I hope it comes from a place of positivity, connection, inclusive and understanding. I really want to be that. I want to be that parent that helps create independence and initiative, but also positivity. I don't know if there's a word that covers that, but it's definitely not dictatorship. It's definitely about nurturing and loving and being a parent, being there. Yeah.
What sort of parenting did you experience as a child, Casey?
I had very supportive parents, and my mum was very pro creating independence. I don't know if she set out to do that, but that's just naturally how she parents. And I watch her with my daughter and that's what I see. I just see her creating really a really inclusive environment. There was definitely, as a, you know, prephrase that, I as absolutely have fantastic parents. They're just unbelievably supportive. And as we spoke earlier, we all can only know how to parent from what we've learned. And so generationally, I would say my parents didn't have a huge connection with understanding feelings and emotions to a level where we could communicate them. And so for me, it's something that I'm really proactive about, identifying the emotion, identifying the feeling and normalizing it. But my parents themselves were very relaxed. Maybe my sisters wouldn't say the same, but in comparison to, say, dictatorship, my mum was certainly relaxed and very encouraging parenting.
You mentioned there around a lot of how we parent comes from the lessons that we've learned, usually from a primary caregiver being our parents for a lot of us. What lessons did you learn from your parents?
Well, I still learn lessons. I still don't tell my mum, you better not be listening. I still learn lessons watching my mum parent. I still do. You know, she knows. She knows, even though I pretend I don't. The biggest one is some of her languaging with Tilly is really lovely. It's really, instead of, mum never sees, and this is probably how I see things as well. I don't think mum actively knows that's what she does. It's just how she is. But she will say, oh, well, what's going on? Like, do you need to go to the toilet, or do you need something to eat? Or she will engage rather than just telling off as such. And she'll let you explore. Mum was, yeah, sure, open the drawer, look all through the drawer, pull the whole drawer out, discover. You know, there weren't boundaries in the sense of not being able to discover and investigate. And mum would have you cooking in a mess everywhere, and that was a part of learning, like very learning driven. And watching her do that it's beautiful. I really enjoy watching that. Yeah, and then I pick up little bits. I don't get to see together a lot because it's usually me at work, but I know because I see on our photo boards and I see from what comes home and I see the connections, so it's obvious. Yeah.
That process of allowing discovery. She sounds like an awesome coach in her own right, just being able to allow you to learn different things your way, and yeah, in your own way. That's really cool. It's something I haven't heard before, just from a parenting point of view, and it's something that I think is really valuable, like for any young person in terms of developing that sense of self.
Yeah, you know, my mum would maybe take her for a walk, and I'm sure this is, I felt as a child mum was very busy because, like me, they had a business and she had a job and three children, and it was
very
busy.
What did they do? What was their business?
My dad was a butcher and he did some other types of work. My mum was a home ec teacher and they had a catering business. So it was a busy life, and they literally gave us everything they could. You know, we were always at swimming or musical instruments or netball. And so it was a really busy life, and I always craved that just one-on-one time with my mum. Like, I still do, and she's still busy. That's mum. You know, that's mum. And she is busy because I demand on her. But it's quite interesting that, you know, now I watch her, and even though she has a bit more time, so they will go for a walk, and sometimes they go for a walk for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And maybe she didn't have that time to do it with us, but the essence, or with me, but the essence of how she did that 2.5 hours or that hour and a half of that hour is generally the same as how she would do it for the microseconds with me, or the minutes, or the 5 minutes. Like, Tilly would go walking and they'd touch every single tree. They'll touch every single branch and, oh, what does that feel like? And is that rough? Put it on your face. Oh, yeah, you can bring the whole branch home that's fallen off in the storm. No worries. You know, take your shoes off and do this, and we'll just sit here and touch the grass and look at this dog. And, you know, it was very, and as I said, I know she has the time now to do that, but I do remember, you know, if we're cooking, she would talk to you, well, what type of flower is this? Very educational based and almost Montessori like, without labeling it.
That's the home ec teacher coming out, just that whole approach. That's really cool. Were your parents really passionate about what they did for business, for work? Were they similar to yourself in that way?
I don't know if they just saw it as work. I think, you know, to a degree, I don't know that I've ever thought about it like that.
Yeah.
I think my dad loved his work, particularly his last job. You know, it was hard, but he loved that he was really in a role that suited him, that he thrived. Like, you would see, even though he was tired when he would get home, he loved field days and connecting with people. And so I guess it was passionate. He was passionate about it. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
maybe he's really suited to the role as well. I think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ask because I'm interested to know where that has come for you as well, because I mean we learn so much through the power of osmosis and being able to, I suppose, be around parents that are have their own jobs, but they've got their business as well. I just get the sense that you're really passionate about what you do for business. So I was just curious to potentially where that may have come from.
They're both very hardworking, you know, loyal, driven people within their own right, within their own where they're at. So I'm sure that ethic of work has come through. I think my work comes from a very passionate place. So that's probably, you know, and I think about my vision every single day that I step into work. So, you know, I really wanted to make a significant difference in the world. I couldn't stand watching the polypharmacy situation with grandparents, and I lost my grandparent at a very similar time to I was watching this and watching her start medication and go downhill. And I want to be able to help people so that that doesn't happen to them. And now, whilst I don't work with dementia or elderly as a general rule, what I do is empower people and support them to get their health in the best place so they can make memories. And that was the essence of why I became a naturopath. I didn't want people to have these long 4 or 5 years of dementia and miss out on time to make memories with their grandchildren. And I vividly remember standing in the pharmacy thinking, I'm not working here forever. I'm going to study and I'm going to make a difference. So that, I guess my passion is so real because I don't want women to be stuck in that level of anxiety or PTSD or those pressures that I had or the anxiety that I've seen women struggle with and miss out on the joy of their children. They had children to have that joy and make memories. So whether that's slightly different because I am so deeply passionate about my ability to help people. So not sure.
I love that. I get a real sense of that. And just around what you were saying before about not so much working with elderly people, but what you're doing in a prevention sense, I think is amazing in terms of one cent of prevention, I think is worth its weight in gold in cure, long-term cure as well. Because I mean, at the end of the day, if we're really focusing on putting that time and energy into that part of our lives now, then that chance decreases in a big way, doesn't it? In terms of what happens.
Absolutely.
On the track.
And the biggest thing from my perspective, like anxiety and stress and depression, is it depletes all the omegas in your eye and brain cell, which we need for long, you know, cognition for long-term healthy life. Mm. So even if we don't think that people don't know that I am indirectly supporting the longevity of their cognition by supporting their stress. And it's fascinating, but we have to be working now on that because
in terms of, and I'm aware of time, but I'm really enjoying this, but in terms of kids and health and what you're doing with your vision, with your work, with your business, is there anything that you can throw out there that you think is really pivotal right now for a young child's health from your point of view?
Yeah, I strongly, strongly believe the more we can nurture their digestive health and their innate immunity, the better their longevity will be, the better their health will be as a whole, because the gut is the base of so many things, particularly the immune system. And we're so bombarded with artificial sweeteners and chemicals and stress at such a young age that the digestive system and therefore the innate immunity gets absolutely hammered. So my focus at home is not about deprivation or complete restriction. I don't feel that's mentally a good thing either. However, the majority is really we talk positively about food and we don't talk about body image or weight loss or this is good food or bad food. We talk about this is sometimes food and how great is this broccoli because that's going to feed all the good bugs in your tummy, and how good is this? It's going to feed your brain, and how good is this? It's going to provide energy. So we talk about the positivity of veggies, really, predominantly veggies. And sometimes I throw in, oh, and that egg's going to be good for your muscles, and just really encourage food as a fuel source that not only tastes good, but, you know, we sit and have a family meal together. It's like almost, it's a non-negotiable, and there's a no phone rule, no technology rule, and we sit and we eat and we talk and we discuss the day and we ask, you know, all those questions. So food is and connection, I think, is the biggest thing from a kid's perspective in health. It's not about giving them a probiotic every day or a vitamin every day. I don't do that with Tilly. You know, she gets a probiotic a few days a week. She gets herbs a few days a week. If, you know, there's a bit of colds around, she has more herbs. She can take herbs. She'll, you know, happily take them, and we talk about them in a positive light. So kids are pretty resilient if they have a good core and a good base to work off of. So food, good food, no sugar.
That is awesome.
No sugar, low chemicals.
I'm sure anyone that watches the video of this see me taking down notes there, and I'm sure everyone else is as well, because I think it's at the end of the day, whether people take it on and implement it or not, just to be able to expand our perspectives in any way that we can, and with this sort of topic being so important, I think I do have another question on it, but I think it's worth as well, like, if you're up for it, having maybe an episode based around this potentially, because I just see it being so valuable to everyone. It's already been valuable to me, and I'm just curious, because as an adult there is a large body of research out there now around reducing just our intake of food. So you've got some Eastern sort of theories on that, obviously, around like the whole 80% Japanese rule. I don't know, I think it's called Hariachibu.
Oh, yeah, Hariachibu, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just around like the whole 80% full theory, and you've got now a lot of Western research that's talking about longevity and vitality being there's a big correlation with how much we're eating. I've always been curious, and I really want to ask you this. Do you think, like, is that different? Is there a different rule? Well, I don't know if it's a rule, but is it different to apply a different mindset to children in that sense? So people are saying as adults we should be skipping a meal here and there, whatever it might be. I'm just curious on your whole opinion on that topic itself, and then from a child health point of view as well.
You know, it probably is a full episode.
In short,
I would say we are born with the ability to understand when we're full, get that message to the brain to say stop eating, we're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable, not full, uncomfortable. And to eat when we need to eat. Like the old message of eat everything on your plate, you know, you'll never get fed again, blah, blah, blah. Like eat everything. We don't live in that type of world these days. Financially, like things are more available, you know, food's more available, yada yada. So and emotionally, we understand that that's not the right thing, kind of the right thing to do. So my big approach with Tilly is let her eat when she's hungry. And if she comes to dinner and she doesn't eat, I know the signs and the cues that are she's not hungry versus she just doesn't want to eat the broccoli tonight. So if it's the, I just don't want to eat the broccoli tonight, well, we're on, you have to have a bite of broccoli. You've got to feed those bugs. Otherwise, they're not going to work for you. If it's the, I'm just not hungry and I know she's eaten before, I'm not going to force it. And we say, are you comfortable? Okay, you're comfortable. So it is the Hariachibu method, I guess. But we lose that understanding of when we're full or when we're not full or when we're complete, I believe, when the emotional connection to food comes in. And that's kind of after age seven. when there starts to become emotional manipulation around food or belief systems around food or body image, and that's when, and then the diet, the detrimental diet industry, you know, that creates a real whole nother game, and that's about being, that's more in adulthood rather than zero kind of 3 to 7. So I'm reading a lot about undieting at the moment for adults. I love the Hari Hachibu method. It's what they, in the Blue Zones book, it's what they use. Yeah, you know about, I think I've heard you talk about Blue Zones book too, but that's what they use. And I say that to clients. I write it on their thing. I'm like, Hari Hachibu, like, you've got to say that before you eat. It's, are you 80% full and stop there? But I really believe now as adults, it's us unprogramming the belief systems around food, not necessarily about how much we consume or this diet or that method or whichever. It really comes down to the emotional connection with food.
We're definitely locking in this next episode, I think, because just on what you started to say around belief systems,
the
word dependency popped into my head as well, in terms of that emotional dependency on food, which seems to be huge in terms of around the world, especially from what I can see in the Western world potentially. But that's only one slice of the pie, I think, pardon the pun, in terms of social media. We're starting to look at all these other realms of dependencies and us handing over our emotional control, our inner power over to these external things, which can be quite detrimental in a lot of ways too. But before we dive down that rabbit hole, I'll start wrapping up. This has been
absolutely
an epic chat. I'd love to finish off with one last question of what are you loving about parenting right now, Casey?
I'm absolutely loving that my strong focus on creating a safe place for my daughter to come and tell me stuff is growing. That's what I'm loving. She came and told me that she'd drawn all over the wall. We got the lollies and we went under the bed and we shared all my lolly bag. She had a lolly bag from a party the week before. Then we wrote my name all over the wall, and that was her. That was what she told us at dinner time.
So there was a nice big piece of art in her picture.
Yeah, I was like, oh wow, and I'm loving my ability to take a breath. And I've watched some. Are you allowed? They're not old, but I've watched some women in my circles and how they've parented over the years, and I've really sat and observed. They probably think I'm stalking them, but and I've gone, oh, okay, that's how they created that connection. And I've asked a few questions around, and so I've really worked hard to do that. So then when she said, you know, she thought that at first you could see her holding back, like, oh, I don't know if I should be telling Mum I'm eating these lollies or drawn all over the wall. You could see she kind of was like, and then she was like, nah, I'm going for it. And she told us. So I'm really loving this lesson that I'm learning out of that and what I'm teaching her. And yeah, I'm just loving watching. I'm creating a safe space, and the cuddles, they're the best.
That is awesome. Just from what you said, it sounds like there might be a hint of your mum's style in there, in terms of being able to ask a question, or like you said, take that breath before we jump to get explicit and directive and tell them off. I think that is really cool, and I just want to say again, this has been an epic chat. I'm really grateful to have had you on the Sounding Board Parenting Podcast, Casey, and I just want to send well wishes across to yourself, Tilly, and Aaron as well.
Thanks, Sean, and you know, I really appreciate you having me on here and holding space for me, because this and doing things like this is also growth, so I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Let us know if anything stood out for you during the chat. As the new pod on the block, it would be awesome if you look out for us and share this episode with someone that you think may be interested. While you're at it, why not head to our socials and share some love with a like, follow, or comment? Keep an eye out for the next pod drop. Big thanks to Stilo Media for producing this piece of art we call Sounding Board Parenting. From our hearts to yours, we hope you're making progress on something that you love and makes you feel alive. Remember, this can go anywhere.